In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, JFK versus the Deep State.
10 days before he was assassinated, he said publicly at a press conference that our goals regarding South Vietnam were to bring American troops home.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to 2 bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month, plus access to my back catalog of episodes. That's over 350 episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus, for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Friday. Stephen Harris returns to the podcast for another installment in our ongoing series on America's secret history. Stephen, doesn't get into the fine minutia of who pulled the trigger here. Was Oswald a patsy? Was there a shooter or shooters on the grassy knoll or in the Daltech building, etc.? Instead, Stephen focuses on the motives for Kennedy's murder and the forces behind the triggerman. Hey, Steve, welcome back to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm fine, Richard. Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
Let me ask you just in general, when researching this book, is there one thing that stood out as something that just completely shocked you or amazed you or angered you?
Well, I mean, I have to be honest with you, almost all of it angered me, because this is my country and the government of the country, not the people. The people are great, but the government since the 1800s did so much. I mean, I think the thing that shocked me the most was the Federal Reserve and how it came to be and what it became. I had thoughts about the JFK assassination, RFK, MLK, 9/11, the Spanish-American War, but the ramifications of the Federal Reserve, which I know we discussed prior, when I really dug into it and saw that that a private corporation has the complete control of America, of the United States of America, that angers me most of all from anything, and amazes me as well that they were able to and still do completely, and it's not an understatement, completely fools the American public and the mainstream media.
And perhaps few chapters in American history have had the lasting impact or effect as the creation of the Federal Reserve in terms of, I suppose you could say, enslaving Americans in debt, essentially.
Absolutely. The Federal Reserve, a totally private corporation with private shareholders that no one will ever know, we can guess, controls the American economy, our finances, and currency. In direct contrast to what the United States Constitution calls for. The United States Constitution calls for Congress to be the only entity that can coin money. And yet the Congress that enacted the Federal Reserve illegally took that power away from Congress and gave it to the Federal Reserve, a totally private corporation. So, yeah, absolutely.
We are going to talk about JFK today. But before that, there was an incident about a year before his assassination. It never came to be. In fact, we didn't even know about it until decades later. But it was a proposed false flag operation against the Cuban government. Again, this is the height of the Cold War. Fidel Castro is in power. The CIA is desperate to get Castro out of power. This false flag operation that was proposed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Operation Northwoods. Let's dive into that chapter, shall we?
Sure. Operation Northwoods is, as you just said, certainly a false flag, which people like me believe 9/11 was, the Boston Massacre of 2013, and many others. And it's just stunning to see what the United States government and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the United States Army, is certainly the United part and parcel of the United States government, what they would do for these false flags. And this was back in March 13th, 1962. Signed by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Lemnitzer, just maybe approximately 8 months prior to John F. Kennedy's assassination. And the Bay of Pigs was a failure, and the CIA and the apparently, obviously, the Joint Chiefs of Staff were preparing to get us into war with Cuba and to get back into Cuba. And they proposed in this document, which the subject is the justification for U.S. military intervention in Cuba, they proposed, among other things, They could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba. These are all points to begin a war with Cuba to overtake it. We could develop a communist Cuban terror campaign in the Miami area in the United States. We could sink a boatload of Cubans en route to Florida, real or simulated. We could foster attempts on the lives of Cuban refugees in the United States. So the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Lemnitzer, was saying in the Operation Northwoods document that we could commit terrorist activities within the 50 states. And there were many other things. They were saying we could land friendly Cubans in uniform to stage attack on Guantanamo base. We could capture Cuban saboteurs inside the base. We could start riots near the base main gate. We could blow up ammunition inside the base, which of course could conceivably kill U.S. soldiers. We could blow up ammunition, burn aircraft on the base. I mean, this is an unbelievable and outrageous document that is part of the U.S. history. It was obviously back in the 90s when Bill Clinton was president, he allowed the Pentagon to release many confidential secret documents. And apparently the Operation Northwoods document was mistakenly released as well, because this is, it's mind-boggling. They could capture, and I'm just reading from this document, they could capture militia group storming the base. We could sabotage ships in Guantanamo Harbor with large fires, naphthalene. We can sink ships, United States ships, near the harbor entrance and then conduct funerals for mock victims. I mean, it's wild. And this was Operation Northwoods, and it shows, at least to me, and it should show to basically every American, of what the United States government is capable of to carry out in to get their end, to get what the government ends are. And of course that includes, which we could discuss today, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which got us into a full-scale Vietnam War. It could include 9/11, which we'll discuss in the future on this podcast, that where there is scientific evidence that shows that there's no way that the fires and the aircraft banging into the Twin Towers was the cause of the Twin Towers collapsing. The 2013 Boston Massacre at the end of the Boston Marathon. I mean, these are things that Operation Northwood just shows what the United States government is capable of doing.
And I guess it was only thanks to John McNamara, the defense secretary. I don't know do we know whether this proposal made it to the president's desk, or was it basically nixed by McNamara?
No, it made it to the president's desk, and we don't know what John Kennedy would have done, but we do know that Bobby Kennedy, his brother, the attorney general, convinced him not to allow it.
Right. One of the things, the more outlandish schemes that was proposed, and I don't know if this is apocryphal or whether it has been verified, whether it's in the document that you have, but around this time in 1962, astronaut John Glenn was preparing to be the first astronaut or the first American to orbit the Earth. And they were even suggesting, that is the architects of Operation Northwoods, that should anything happen, and again, this was pretty risky, sending a man into space in those days, should that rocket explode, they were going to find a way by hook or by crook to blame John Glenn's death and the explosion on the Cubans.
Well, I have to admit, I never heard that. But when you look at Operation Northwoods, Can it surprise you that it's almost certainly true? I mean, the CIA and the U.S. Army, armed forces, without a doubt, wanted and needed Cuba back in the American fold. And they were doing anything and everything to achieve that goal. And you'll find out later in this interview that one of the things that John F. Kennedy was doing, which apparently caused his death, was to negotiate with Castro to get relations between the two countries back to normal. And this was totally against what the CIA and the U.S. Armed Forces wanted.
That is certainly my understanding, as one of the motives for taking Kennedy out was that there was a perception that he was soft on communism. Although, he showed a pretty iron will and a very steady hand in dealing with the Cuban Missile Crisis when Khrushchev put Soviet missiles offshore in Cuba. That could hardly be perceived as being soft on communism.
Yeah, I mean, that always had me puzzled, how the CIA tried to show JFK as being, as you say, soft on communism. I mean, that Cuban Missile Crisis, even though JFK and Bobby knew that there was almost no way that the Russians were going to go to war against the United States, it still showed that John was just totally pro-American and anti-Russia. And so that always amazed me as well, Richard.
So let's talk about, let's lay the groundwork, I guess, for Kennedy's assassination, because my feeling is that the moment he was sworn in, that it had already been decided that he had to be taken out, because he was perceived by the national security state, this almost permanent apparatus, that Kennedy was a national security risk as far as they were concerned. He had to go. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. Understand that the deep state always virtually knows who is going to be president prior. They have goofed in the past, and as we've already covered, they goofed on President James Garfield. And they probably goofed on Truman as well, but I have no proof of that. And that's not in America's Secret History because I can't prove it. But they certainly goofed on John F. Kennedy because Richard Nixon was supposed to be the president of the United States. And what they didn't count on was that about 2 weeks before the election, insiders knew that California was the key to the election. And Joe Kennedy, John's father, who at the time was extremely powerful, went to California and secretly met with the head of the mafia, I forget the name, in California, and guaranteed them that if they helped John Kennedy win the presidency, that John and Bobby would not interfere at all in their operations. And that was one of John Kennedy's biggest faults was that during his presidency and Bobby going after the mafia, that really hurt them both. But Joe going into California and asking the mafia for help and promising the mafia without John's knowledge, John or Bobby's knowledge, that almost certainly enabled John Kennedy to take California and win the presidency.
And there's also, of course, Sam Giancana in Illinois. Supposedly, in certain precincts, the story goes, Sam Giancana ordered his minions to throw ballot boxes into Lake Michigan.
Yes.
And that, I don't know if that was the difference, but although Kennedy won by a large margin in the electoral votes, it was something like 303 to Nixon's 219. The popular vote was razor thin, 112 million. 112,000, which, you know, that's a couple of precincts in a large city. Maybe yes. That was the difference in Chicago right there. But
That's correct. And so the deep state, the powers behind the scene, behind the government, were shocked without a definitely that Kennedy won. And so, yes, he was targeted almost from the beginning, as you said.
Well, so there's the first motive for his assassination, if you believe, as I do, that certainly organized crime was, they were recruited by this hit squad. So you had Sam Giancana's mob family basically betrayed by the Kennedys after doing them a favor at the behest of Joe Kennedy. All of a sudden, Bobby turns around and starts prosecuting organized crime. So he obviously, Giancana felt totally betrayed. Also, you had a lot of mob-owned casinos in Cuba before Castro came along, and they desperately wanted those properties back.
Exactly.
So that's certainly a good reason for the mob to want Kennedy taken care of. But let's talk about some of the other players in the deep state. Let's talk about Alan Dulles.
Well, I don't get into Dulles specifically in America's Secret History, but what I do get into is that there were three reasons, big reasons, for a coup d'etat, which Kennedy's assassination was. And the first one was Kennedy was negotiating with Khrushchev for a nuclear disarmament treaty. And on June 10, 1963, less than 5 months prior to Dealey Square, Kennedy's death, Kennedy addressed the graduating class of American University. And he said, "Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward. War makes no sense in an age when the deadly poisons produced by a nuclear exchange would be carried by wind and water and soil and seed to the far corners of the globe and to generations yet unborn. I'm taking this opportunity, therefore, to announce two important decisions in this regard." So Kennedy, I'm going to go on, but Kennedy was actually telling the powers that be in the government and behind the government that he was going to end the Cold War. And that's so significant. He said, he further said, "I take this opportunity to announce that the Chairman Khrushchev, myself, and Prime Minister McMillan and I have agreed that high-level discussions will shortly begin in Moscow, looking toward early agreement on a comprehensive test ban treaty. Our hopes must be tempered with the caution of history, but with our hopes go the hopes of all mankind. Our To make clear our good faith and solemn convictions on the matter, I now declare that the United States does not propose to conduct nuclear tests in the atmosphere so long as other states do not do so. We will not be the first to resume. Such a declaration is no substitute for a formal binding treaty, but I hope it will help us achieve one. Nor would such a treaty be a substitute for disarmament, but I hope it will help us achieve it." So roughly 4 months prior to November 22nd, President John Kennedy was telling the powers that be that he was conducting negotiations for a nuclear disarmament, which was totally against everything that the deep state was striving for. Vietnam, we had advisors in Vietnam, and they obviously, as we'll see, wanted to escalate the advisors into a full-scale war with United States, with 500,000 United States troops involved. And he was telling the military-industrial complex that there would be no more nuclear arms, that the billions of dollars that was going to be made was not going to be made. This was monumental. I mean, this was extraordinary. And so this is, to me, the biggest reason, although there are two others, as we'll get to. But this, to me, was the biggest reason for John F. Kennedy's assassination.
Right. And I'm just thinking about that nuclear disarmament proposal. And you, I'm sure, are a fan of Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove, or How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the Bomb. And the character in that's played by Slim Pickens, I'm not sure if it's the Slim Pickens character or George C. Scott's character that is, remember that line, "You can't fight in here, this is the war room." But one of those two was supposed to be, I believe, a takeoff on U.S. Air Force General Curtis LeMay, who is often described as being a total, talk about a hawk. He was the most hawkish hawk in the history of the United States. They called him bomb happy. He never met a nuclear bomb he didn't love.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that as Curtis LeMay in the Pentagon is hearing that speech at American University, he's just like, so he's just scything with anger. He's seething rather with anger, probably cracking walnuts with his bare hands.
Yeah, I mean, presumably, I don't have this in America's Secret History because I couldn't prove it, but presumably Curtis LeMay was in the autopsy room in the hospital when JFK's body was returned to Maryland, to D.C., but in Maryland, and observing the with a smile on his, big smile on his face, the fake autopsy that was done. There's no doubt about it. You're right on, spot on.
More of my conversation with Stephen Harris, the author of America's Secret History, when Conspiracy Unlimited return.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Everytown podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan. The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Plinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Here's Colleen Forgas, our full script dispensary manager and nutritional therapist. Hey, Colleen.
Hi, Richard.
Tell me about hair, nails, and skin.
Well, we have a product from Pure Encapsulation, which is called Hair, Skin, Nails Ultra. And what I like about this product is that it contains collagen, and that's a big buzzword, very beneficial for all of those, the skin, hair, and nails. And some other natural vitamins and nutrition, biotin, for example, is one that's included in this product. And it's great for just making sure we're taking the best care as we can of our hair, skin, and nails.
Hair, Skin, and Nails Ultra. And that's available at my Strange Planet Full Script Dispensary. All you need to do is visit strangeplanet.ca and click on the Full Script Dispensary button and register. Don't forget, all orders receive 10% off, and orders of $50 or more ship for free. These products have not been evaluated by the FDA and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider.
Richard has tiny talking insects living in his sock drawer.
We have bags and we are living in Richard's
sock drawer.
Conspiracy Unlimited. With Richard Serrett.
Stephen Harris is here. We're talking about the various motives for JFK's assassination. So the other thing you talked about was the withdrawal of troops from South Vietnam, American troops, which I think were about 16,000 at that time. But as you say, they wanted to ramp that up from about 16,000 to 500,000. And so along comes Kennedy's National Security Action Memorandum 263, which was going to take things in the opposite direction. Rather than increasing troops, they wanted to withdraw a considerable amount of those 16,000.
Definitely. On October 11th, just roughly 6 weeks prior to November 22nd, when he was killed, Kennedy issued NSAM, National Security Agency Memorandum 263, as you just said, stating that a phased withdrawal of all United States troops was to begin, with 1,000 troops exiting Vietnam by the end of the year, and then all troops removed by the end of 1965, all U.S. troops removed by the end of 1965. And on November 12, just 10 days before he was assassinated, he issued publicly, this is important, NSAM 263 was private, but 10 days before he was killed, he said publicly at a press conference that our goals regarding South Vietnam were to bring American troops home. Nowhere, for the first time, did he mention victory, which is a turnaround from all prior remarks. And so the powers that be again saw that President Kennedy was going to be bringing his troops home, ending America's participation in Vietnam. This was tantamount to treason to them, because this was exactly the opposite of what they aspired to.
One of the arms manufacturing companies that stood to lose perhaps the most was Bell Helicopter. We all remember all of those movies and TV shows about the war in Vietnam, and the Bell Helicopter would come and land in the middle of a rice paddy, and all the troops would jump out and so forth. I mean, that was Bell Helicopter's bread and butter.
Yes, that's right.
So that certainly must have had them, again, seething with rage, Memorandum 263.
Absolutely. And what you should also know, what all our listeners should know, is that 2 days prior to Dealey Square, so on November 20th, just 2 days prior to allegedly Lee Harvey Oswald independently assassinating the president, 2 days prior, senior cabinet members and all military officials met in Honolulu and issued OPLAN, that's OPLAN 34A, which was intended for presentation to the president, apparently not the current president, on November 20th, which called for intensified sabotage raids against the North, utilizing Vietnamese commandos under U.S. supervision. Quite significantly, though, these plans were not shown to Defense Secretary McNamara, who was JFK's principal cabinet member who backed him completely. And Kennedy's withdrawal order was being sabotaged, obviously, by plans to ship out soldiers who were due for rotation anyway. So OPLAN 34A was totally against NSAMP, the presidential executive order, NSAMP 263. Just 2 days prior to his assassination.
It's almost as if they knew Kennedy wouldn't be around to enforce the memorandum, so they were going to do what they wanted anyway.
You got it, Richard. That's exactly what this is. This is indirect proof that the government of the United States knew that President John F. Kennedy would not be around to adhere to this memorandum.
So let's move on to another motive. We talked about his proposal, Kennedy's proposal for nuclear disarmament. We've talked about Memorandum 263. Now there's, of course, another motive which involves the Federal Reserve.
Well, I don't have this in the book, I don't believe, but there's no doubt about it that John F. Kennedy was a direct opponent to the Federal Reserve. And he was thinking along the lines of Abraham Lincoln's greenbacks. He was thinking that, and the reason it is not in America's secret history is because it could not be verified. But only facts that are verified appear in America's secret history. And yet it is true that JFK met with the Federal Reserve president, and the Federal Reserve got the notion that JFK was considering gold-backed currency, and which was, of course, completely against the Federal Reserve, what the Federal Reserve wanted.
Right, right. Executive Order 1110. They were certificates. They were backed by silver, actually. Silver bullion. And as you say, yes, this was exactly the same thing that Lincoln had tried with his greenbacks to circumvent the central bank. And these would be certificates backed by silver bullion. So obviously that's an affront to the Federal Reserve. I mean,
you affront the Federal Reserve, Richard, you're in trouble.
Exactly, exactly. I don't know how far Kennedy was intending to go with these silver certificates. Was it his aim to ultimately bypass the Federal Reserve entirely, or was he just sort of floating a trial balloon with these silver certificates? I don't know.
Well, I didn't know either, and as I say, that's why I did not include it in America's Secret History. But there's no doubt about it that it was a thought on his part. He is knowingly the only recent president who has gotten these thoughts and who has seen the Federal Reserve as it is, although we know President Trump has had quite a few run-ins with Powell, Federal Reserve Chairman Powell, regarding what the Federal Reserve has done. But Kennedy's was basically the only time that we heard that a president was thinking of silver-backed currency in direct response to what the Federal Reserve wants.
Yeah, it would be curious to know how many were in circulation. And I believe that they were, in fact, in circulation until about 1968, so 5 years after the executive order was issued. And then I guess it would have been Johnson or maybe Nixon who pulled the plug on the silver certificates.
Well, Nixon, and I believe that this is one of the reasons Richard Nixon was president. Richard, in 1971, did what the New York Times referred to as Nixon shock. He completely eliminated the gold backing from America's currency, giving the Federal Reserve complete control of being able to issue money, which they have done since 1971, in the trillions. I believe it was $4 trillion in 2009 to relax the 2008 federal recession. And now, with the pandemic stimulus plan, I think it's another $3 million. So at least $7 million between those two. And in the interim, I'm sure it's up into the $10 to $20 trillion that the Federal Reserve has, in quantitative easing, has released currency into the American economy because of the Nixon shock in 1971.
So, when we describe the Kennedy assassination as a coup d'état, why? I mean, and we've talked about other attempted coup d'états. We talked about Lincoln, his assassination, as being an attempted coup d'etat. It wasn't successful because Lincoln, the other members of Lincoln's administration survived, and of course Andrew Johnson, the vice president, became president. And so the deep state element involved in Lincoln's assassination were not successful in completely taking over the executive branch because Lincoln's vice president survived.
Yes.
So, but why do we call the Kennedy assassination a successful coup?
The government completely changed. On November 22nd, by 1965, every American soldier had to be out of Vietnam. By 1965, most likely, Khrushchev, McMillan, and Kennedy would have arrived at a total nuclear disarmament, whereby there would be no more testing of nuclear arms and no more proliferation of nuclear arms. And what we haven't touched on, Kennedy was negotiating with Fidel Castro for a complete détente, where the two countries would be having normal relations with one another, and presumably part of the negotiations was that Castro would give the United States reparations for all of the property that American property that American financiers lost in Cuba when Castro took over in 1959. And so this is what the entire establishment, deep state, saw. And this is why Kennedy had to go.
Stephen, how do we get a copy of America's Secret History, How the Deep State, the Fed, the JFK, MLK, and RFK assassinations, and much more led to Donald Trump's presidency?
Amazon.com, BNN.com, just go to America's Secret History. I would like to say, do I have another few minutes, Richard?
Yes.
I would like to summarize why Kennedy had to be assassinated by the establishment and the deep state by reading a portion of the book. Do
yes.
I have that?
Yes, please. Please do.
John F. Kennedy was the first U.S. president since Abraham Lincoln to alienate the office from the forces of the military, big business, and the money powers. He was becoming almost totally autonomous, utilizing the presidency for what he felt was for the betterment of the country. Détente with the Soviet Union and Cuba would have proven disastrous to the military-industrial complex, especially when it came time to escalate hostilities in Vietnam. A limited nuclear disarmament pact with the Soviet Union would have made the domino theory of communist containment a lot less likely for the American people to swallow, meaning potentially billions less in military spending and profits in the decades to come, and far less control for the military. These same forces must have been horrified at the prospect of a friendly communist Cuba, especially the president of the United States negotiating peace with a leader they were trying to kill. A coup was the only alternative. With either Vice President Lyndon Johnson's direct participation or his coercion into cooperating, the government of the United States of America changed hands immediately, with LBJ sworn in as president aboard Air Force One. Almost as soon as Johnson deplaned and entered the White House, America's war activity in Vietnam increased, and détente with Cuba and the Soviet Union ceased to exist. A perfect plot involved a communist-leaning and pro-Cuba activist, Lee Harvey Oswald, placed him six stories above an open presidential motorcade with a high-powered rifle, with additional firepower assistance or not. It didn't matter. And swear in a puppet president to execute a 180-degree turn in Kennedy's American foreign policy. They had destined Vietnam as the next Korean War machine, a war to test their various new weapons. They would pour the country's money into it in order to drive up the national debt and their profit, issue the huge contracts for the necessary war materials, and encroach their military bases and warplanes even further into Asia, with almost total control over the southeast portion of the continent. The wealth and strategic power would have been staggering. From the June 1963 commencement speech at American University to NSAM 263 to his potentially favorable conversations with Castro, JFK's treasonous actions had to be silenced, eradicated, and his policies reversed. A simple assassination would have been completely ineffective if LBJ had not cooperated. And by his actions concerning Vietnam, Cuba, and the Soviets, he certainly did from the moment he took the oath of office. Could the mafia have gotten to LBJ? Castro? The Russians? Could any of them have delivered the president to Oswald and or other gunmen on the grassy knoll in an open motorcade? No. Only the CIA, the FBI, the Secret Service, and or the Pentagon had the power and the immediate need to pull it off. Kennedy was after peace. It would become his legacy. But the real power in the country lay in the military and the CIA, and they effectively totally changed American history in the latter part of the 20th century. As Peter Janney writes in Mary's Mosaic, they had killed Jack because he and his ally in peace, Nikita Khrushchev, was steering the world away from the Cold War towards peace, thereby eliminating the military-industrial complex's most treasured weapons, the fear of war, the fear of communist takeover, and the manipulative use of fear itself. The Cold War was about to end, and with it the covert arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. The agency would have been all but neutered, its funding and resources cut, its menacing grip on public opinion exposed and eliminated. It also meant the eventual curtailment of many of the defense industries, including the proliferation of nuclear arms. There would have been no war in Southeast Asia or Vietnam. That too was about to end. A rapprochement with Fidel Castro in Cuba was on the horizon. Both Jack and Fidel wanted a lasting peace. The point, though, is really not if JFK would have withdrawn from Vietnam or would have reached détente with Russia and Cuba, significantly reducing the perception of a red menace. It is that the United States government, from Vice President Johnson to the CIA and FBI, to the cabinet, to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the NSA and all of his advisors, they believed, that's the key word here, believed that President Kennedy was heading in those directions. Short of praying for a loss at the polls in the 1964 election, their only course of action and a deterrent was a coup d'etat.
All right. We will leave it right there, and we will pick it up next time with the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. Stephen, always a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm there, Richard, and it is a pleasure.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a few moments to share a few details about an upcoming episode. One tablespoon of ESS60 from C60 Evo helps keep me pain-free, energized, and mentally focused. And I'm sleeping so much better since I started taking ESS60 back in November. ESS60 is the consumable form of C60, the miracle molecule discovered by Nobel Prize-winning chemists in the 1990s. ESS60 is a mega antioxidant, 172 times more powerful than vitamin C. Check out the Paris study, a peer-reviewed scientific study online, where ESS60 suspended in olive oil was fed to rats. The rats fed ESS60 lived almost twice their normal lifespan. I can't sit here and tell you I'm going to live to be 112, but I'm 56 and I haven't felt this youthful, energized, and pain-free since I was in my 20s. ESS60 from C60 Evo. If you want to discover the benefits of this amazing miracle molecule for yourself, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the link for C60Evo.com. And don't forget to use the code RS1SPEC when ordering, and you'll receive an additional 5% off. ESS60, the miracle molecule from C60 Evo. It's changed my life. Discover what it can do for you. This product has not been evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to cure, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider. Coming up next time, food safety advocate Jeffrey M. Smith reveals shocking facts about how genetically modified organisms, GMOs, entered our lives. Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.